Okay, Shalom Aleichem. How's my projection? Is it better if I stand up? You guys can hear me? Okay, great. Amazing. And it could be I'll stand up at a certain point. This is a really, really exciting thing for me. As I was telling my son Hillel on the way, I went to OJ for 2 years. So I have not been back to Moshav Beit Meir since then, since probably some of the most formidable years, if not the most formidable years of my life. And the air in this place is really something else. David HaMelech, they say, wrote Tehillim here, or some of Tehillim here. Do you guys get to spend time in the mountains here also? You guys you walk up a little bit? It's kedai just to daven here and to think here and to walk here and to breathe here. It's a really, really halig thing. So, look, we have, I think, 45 minutes or so. And they told me what the title of the night's class was going to be. So it touches upon two things that I love very, very dearly. But really, ultimately, there's only one thing. Right, so the title of the shiur is how I believe it's something hitting rock bottom, how the teachings of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov can be utilized for individuals suffering from addiction. Okay, so I have anecdotal kind of experience in this. I lived in St. Louis with my family for the last 10 years or so. St. Louis? Oh, okay, I thought you were tapping. I get very excited. Okay. So I was living in St. Louis, and I was working at a rehab. I went to graduate school. I went to Landers for a psych undergrad, and then I went to Wurzweiler for a social work degree, all the while kind of learning Torah as I understood it. And then I basically started off as a first-year social worker, which was, you begin meeting with clients and just kind of... But it was a rehab center, so we're dealing with individuals, non-Jews. Most of them have never seen a Jew before in their lives, who are suffering the full extent of drug addiction or alcoholism. Now, to kind of give just an abstract of what we're talking about mental health, right? Hopefully nobody in this room should ever have to know anything more about addiction than they already know, unless it's a field that you want to go into, and then I'm more than happy to speak to you about anything you want to know. But hopefully you shouldn't have to have any exposure, but we're dealing with a severe form of mental illness that affects the body, the mind, the soul. It keeps a person stuck in a certain behavior that is destructive. But what the individual is experiencing is an immense amount of pain. A person who's struggling with addiction is in a profound amount of pain. And they're searching for something, which is why they've gotten into their addictions. Any addiction, any behavior. And I hate to break it to you guys, I'm a big believer in the spectrum of addiction. Meaning to say, we all live in a potential towards addiction because we're human beings. And to be a human being means to live with a potential towards addiction. Addiction is any attempt to alleviate pain through a behavior or an activity or a mindset or a thinking pattern or anything that I do that I know is not good for me, yet I can't stop doing it because it provides me with relief from pain. Now that can be a way of thinking, that could be learning, that could be davening, that could be, God forbid, doing something that's dangerous, that's difficult. But working with these clients, these were individuals who happened to become addicted to either alcohol or heroin, primarily was the main drugs of choice. So we're talking about real, real drug addiction. Now, the thing about drug addiction and the thing about the field of addiction or alcoholism, and again, something that applies to all of us, is that anytime that there's an issue, right? So let's say you have a psychological issue, right? A person has too much anxiety or a person is experiencing depression. So like any doctor or like any professional, they're going to try and identify what the issue is and to develop a plan of action to fix the issue. When it comes to addiction or the nature of addiction, I'm not talking about the substance, right? When a person is engaged in an addictive behavior, so the behavior has to stop. But what is it at the core of addiction that people are experiencing? And what the world had kind of really become aware of is that the addict is not seeking pleasure. The addict is not seeking to have fun. They're not seeking joy. What they're seeking is relief from pain that they're experiencing. Anybody here been in a state of emotional pain before in their lives? Emotional pain, physical pain, psychological pain. The most natural thing that a person wants to do in a situation like that is to escape it. Now, a person who finds themselves in addiction is somebody who feels that pain more than other people. They're more aware of the fact that life is difficult. They're more aware of anxiety. They're more aware of the broken nature of things. Maybe there's more trauma. But because they're more aware of pain, emotional pain, psychological pain, there's also more of a desire to find relief. Now, let's say there's a number scale of things that offer relief from 1 to 10. So a person who's in a little bit of pain is going to try a 1, and maybe they'll be satisfied, because if it's a 1 level of pain, then a 1 level of pain relief is going to do it. But if I'm at a 10 level of pain, God forbid, then I'm going to be searching for the 10 level of pain relief. And so what is happening in addiction is that a person has been in a lot of pain, and they found what they think is going to relieve them from their pain. And because it offers them a moment of relief from pain, emotional pain, psychological pain, they're going to say, wow, I've been searching my entire life for something that would make me feel better. I have been searching my entire life for a win. Right? I've been experiencing losses in my life for so long. I am ready for a win. And when a person finds something that offers them the thing that they've been looking for their whole life, right? Let's say I've been searching for A, B, or C my entire life, and I can't find it, I'm told it doesn't exist, and then suddenly I discover A, B, and C, and it fixes everything. So if someone comes to me and says, whoa, 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 this thing that is relieving your pain right now, you got to stop doing it, right? A person who has finally found relief is going to say, no, 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 I can't stop doing that. That's what happens with addiction. You guys with me so far? Any questions, comments? Okay, give up. So what recovery is the process of a person breaking free from addiction, right? The thing is, you really never stop being an addict. A person never stops needing relief. But what a person does is they start living with that in a healthy way. And so in the field of psychiatry, the field of psychology, they tried everything. They tried whatever it would be to help a person get rid of addiction. Medication, psychology, none of it really works. Some of it helps, but none of it works. Until there was a notion called the 12 steps. Anybody hear of the 12 steps before? Okay, so the 12 steps are something referred to as AA or Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, we're talking about there's a bunch of 12-step programs. It's not coming from a Jewish place, that's first and foremost, right? 12 steps is not necessarily it's coming from a Christian place. It's coming from a place of a little bit of Christianity, but in the end of the day, it helps a lot of Yidden, and the tzaddikim, the rabbanim, especially Rav Avraham Yeshua Twersky, Zechus Yogan Aleinu, they took it and they applied it to Kedusha. So yes, there are going to be tzaddikim who say that it's not the ideal way to do it. They'll say, why 12 steps? Make 26 steps. Hashem Havaya. I said, you know, that's not really how it works. We can't just make up steps. They're like, no, find it. Figure it out. So one day we'll get there. But for now, the 12 steps is the best medicine that Jewish people have when struggling with addiction. And more importantly, because thankfully all of us are functional or healthy, if we're on NCSY Cola, there was no way I was getting into NCSY Cola as a teenager. Just to say, I was not going to be accepted into a Haley place like this. So everyone here is likely healthy to one degree or another. But that doesn't mean that we don't have a potential towards addiction in ourselves. Because we all have a potential towards pain. We all have a potential towards emotional pain, psychological pain, physical pain, God forbid. And we also all have a potential towards seeking relief from that pain. And we all have a tendency to get stuck in our own ways of thinking, our own patterns of behavior, God forbid, even destructive behaviors. And so even though we might not necessarily say, oh, I'm not an addict, I don't have to listen to this, it's good information. And also there's always a part of us that is a little bit stuck in something. All of us have something that we know is not good for us to one degree or another that we cannot let go of because of the relief it provides for us. And it's holding us back and we want to learn how to let go of it in one way or another. So the crazy thing about 12 steps, the craziest thing about 12 steps is they said there is no cure. There is nothing that is going to get rid of addiction. There is nothing that's going to fix it except one thing and one thing alone. And that thing is connecting to spirituality. Connecting to a higher power. A higher power is a way of describing Hashem, right? Hashem is a higher power. Hashem is something that's above me. Hashem is bigger than me. And so the notion is, there is no breaking free from the claws of addiction, right? The sugya of yediya and bechira really, really touches to the core of addiction. But what 12 steps came along and said is that a person can't break free from the relief that they found, but they can attach themselves to true relief. And the only true relief that a person is going to find that's not going to destroy them and everything they love is connection to God. Because God is in truth the place where all relief is going to come from. And so the process of the 12 steps is basically come to terms with the fact that you are powerless over this thing. You can't control your behavior. You can't control your thinking pattern. And then it's a series of steps and processes that eventually bring you to a place where you realize that, Ribbono Shel Olam, I can't do anything on my own. I can't get up in the morning on my own. I can't walk a step on my own, which is equally true for each and every one of us, whether we have $1 billion in the bank or whether we're a homeless individual on the street. We all have nothing, nothing. And so the recognition is that when a person attaches themselves to the one place that can actually maybe provide some element of comfort or relief, they're going to be attaching themselves to their higher power, the Ribbono Shel Olam. And there's also a process of meditation and prayer and talking with friends about it and giving tzedakah and doing service work and setting up chairs and bittul. So there's a lot to be said about this. So I enter into this field, right? I'm working at the Harris House in St. Louis, Missouri. People have never met a Jew before, right? I had a client once, an Irish client. His last name was O'Neill. He said, I have a family tree. We trace our lineage back to Esau. I said, oh, like that's, you know, like we're cousins, nice, you know. He was a client of mine, a sick man, but a wonderful man. But he was like, their lineage was to Esau. And it was the first time I was the Jew that they met. And I came in, thankfully, I had a supervisor. When I started working, I was in Wurzweiler. I did the block program, which is a summer program, and then you do practicum during the year. And my first year of practicum was in the Bronx, by like one of the biggest mental health programs for the Spanish-speaking community. And how these systems work, for better or for worse, this is just how it goes in exile, is that there's like 1 million workers and none of them are treated properly and none of them are really great. And then you have like this one Jewish clinician on top who's like in this beautiful office and they're the genius of the thing and they're in charge of the whole thing. And I was speaking to this woman. Her name was Alyssa Mallow. She was a Jewish woman, not religious. And I was fresh. I was fresh back from OJ. I was fresh and I was black and white and I was momish, you know, like carrying my books with me. I had just done Hask for the summer, so I perfected the art of like carrying a book with you to make it look like you're learning. You know, like I had, like we had the pocket size farm, right? And so I asked her, I said, I'm working with the criminal justice system. We're working with primarily African-American, Hispanic communities, individuals who have committed significantly frightening crimes, and they're in the process of recovery. And I said, should I change the way I dress? Should I reorient myself towards how I present myself? And she said to me three things, which remained with me always. It's that own your garments, own your image, and what people will see when they see you is suffering, survival, and faith. It will be your weapon. And I said, okay. And I always had my tzitzis out. And when I was giving shirim on Eminem songs or Jay-Z songs for this chevra, you know, trying to find, you know, recovery information from them, they all understood. They're like, what are these antennas? And so I always carried myself with that. I come to St. Louis, and I start working there as a social worker, and I start giving groups. Right? I start giving groups, which are basically meant to be group therapy. But for me, I began to use them as basically chaburas, and I began introducing, in addition to 12-step theory, in addition to philosophy and neuroscience, I began introducing ideas that I knew to be incredibly beneficial. So these people didn't have to learn Torah. They're not Jewish, which, as Rav Kook taught me, as I understand from Rav Kook's writings, if they're not Jewish, I don't have to worry. I don't have to worry about them, you know, falling into the pockets of Kfira. I can give them information that's going to make them feel good and embolden them without worrying, but make sure you're still getting up in the morning for Minyan, because lo echpatli, what do I care what they're doing? I just want them to get well. And so it gave me a little bit of freedom. So I began to say, you know, and we're talking about hopelessness and hope, and there was an individual, a 17th century Ukrainian mystic named Naaman. And they said, and I began to say, and this person, Naaman, had a theory of hope and hopelessness. And then I began to take everything I learned from Rabbi Nachman about tikva and yeyush and hopelessness, and I began to convey it as a theory, and I began to see that the chevra who I was speaking to were enamored by it. They wanted more of the information. They wanted more of the content. And then I began to teach them about Karolitz's theory of self. Right, Carol, and I began to read letters from the Chazon Ish and the stoicism of the Chazon Ish, and they began to be amazed by it. They're writing notes, they knew Morgenstern's theory of doubt, the Rebbe Rav Itchemeyer, they knew Liner's theory of self, right, Ishbitz, Radzin, Baal Shem Tov, Groth, Kramer's theory of 70 emotions, and they became so enamored by it, so enamored by what our wisdom was teaching us, that, and it wasn't surprising. It's not surprising, because what we have to understand is as follows. When a person, God forbids, find themselves stuck in addiction, in the miserable experience of where you have to get your life saved, that's not different. That's not different than the person who wakes up in the morning with that sense of anxiety, with that sense of it's too much right now, I don't know how to move forward. It's just not nearly as intense, right? So the levels of human experience go from 1 to 1,000,000, let's say. The addicts in recovery are at the 1,000,000 point, right? Things have gotten as intense as they needed to get, and those people are in crisis. But to be at the 1 or the 2 line, just because you're not in crisis doesn't mean that we don't need this insight also. And if these ideas work for one person, then they're going to work for everybody. And the evidence came out from my experience there that the teachings of our tzaddikim, the teachings of what the Arizal is giving over, meaning when a person looks at Kabbalah, when a person thinks they're studying Panimiyas HaTorah, what's happening? So first and foremost, we have to look at the concepts. The first concept that the Arizal talks to us about is that how did Hashem create the world? So what would you expect? You expect to hear from mysticism, Kabbalah, something beautiful, something wonderful. Hashem created the world in this majestic way. Everything is supposed to be ideal. When you read what the Panimiyas HaTorah is saying, that's not what you find. How did Hashem create the world? By removing himself. So that's the first thing, first trauma. Hashem removes himself. Then the next stage is Hashem tries to build things up again, and then they shatter apart and break, and there's another trauma. Every step of the way, when you're learning what Panimiyas HaTorah says, especially by Rabbi Nachman, as we're going to see, it's not trying to create a world that seems perfect. Because that's not what any tzaddik was ever trying to do, and it's not what the Torah is ever trying to do. The Torah is the opposite of something that describes human beings as being perfect. The Torah is what allows us to be imperfect. The entire Torah is there to teach us that you are a human being and you are imperfect, not because you're not good enough, not because you haven't tried enough, not because you weren't rich enough or you didn't have the Abercrombie and Fitch, whatever it was. You guys dress very differently these days, but it's I like it. You guys are great. But meaning here, you're good, but the high school kids, I'm saying, and the way it's different than how we used to function a little bit. But it's very easy for a person to think that, okay, I'm imperfect and it's my fault. I'm imperfect because I'm not smart enough. Things are broken or things are difficult or things are painful because I messed up somewhere along the way. And Nebuch, our parents and our teachers, very often, you guys are here in a halakha place which doesn't have the same problems, but very often a child doesn't even know what's happening to them and the teachers are reinforcing the whole thing the whole time, unbeknownst to anybody. So it's just repeating the same cycle of just assuming there's something wrong with me because I'm imperfect. There's something wrong with me because I'm imperfect. Everybody with me? And if I'm imperfect because I've done something wrong, then the next thing I want to do is I want to go find ways to feel perfect, right? I've got to be perfect. The goal is to be perfect. I feel imperfect and I have to be perfect. So I either go and I start learning 24 hours a day in the hopes that that's going to make me feel good. I start davening with intensity, feeling that if I daven hard enough, then I'll feel perfect. I maybe start dressing a certain way. I, God forbid, start thinking a certain way. I try acting in a certain way that I think is going to provide me with that sense of perfection. And every time it fails, I convince myself, oh, it's because of me. I'm still not good enough. See, my teacher told me this would happen. And we never assume that maybe, just maybe, if we can never feel perfect, maybe that's not the goal. Maybe it's actually an impossibility. What happens in addiction is, in addiction, an individual begins to feel that there has to be something perfect in this world. There has to be. There has to be. There has to be a redemption because it's too painful otherwise. And when they discover their substance or their behavior, and like we said, they feel like they've hit the lottery, so in that moment they're going to say, I finally found relief. What recovery is saying is that, no, no, no. The goal of recovery, the goal of being a Ben Adam, is to come to realize that I am imperfect and that is exactly how I am supposed to be. I was never meant to be perfect. I was perhaps sold a garbage dream of perfection because, you know, America and Israel, to a certain degree, capitalism is rooted in perfection, right? I'm hungry, so buy something to make you happier. I'm feeling a certain way, so go somewhere to fix this. Everything we do, every time we think about an object or we think about money, what it does to us is create a simple, simple solution. This is the problem, that's the solution, I need to buy that solution, ingest that solution, and that's going to fix things. So we continuously try and try and try and try. Until when a person in recovery comes to realize that, wait a second, the only thing that I can actually do as a human being is not try and be perfect, but it's accept my own imperfection. That's what's rock bottom. Rock bottom experience, powerlessness, is coming to a place where I recognize that my job is not to be perfect. You know why? Because Hashem is the only thing that's perfect. And as long as Hashem is the only thing that's perfect, by definition, I am imperfect. My imperfections are the things that make me me as opposed to somebody else. My nekudas hachisaron, the thing that makes it difficult for me. And again, like we said, the difficulty should be the easiest things in the world. But that is where the individual finds themselves. Contrary to other religions of the world that said human beings were perfect, and then they messed up, and now they're imperfect because they messed up. So the goal is, okay, I messed up. I created my imperfection. The goal is to be perfect, so let me work on being perfect. And if you believe in perfection, then you could believe in a human being that could become God, God forbid. But what Yiddishkeit says is the very opposite. Adam HaRishon was not perfect. Adam HaRishon was placed in Gan Eden to do what? La'avda u'lashamra. To cultivate it and to guard it. If things are perfect, there's no need to cultivate and there's no need to guard. Cultivation implies that if I don't take care of this, it's going to lose its potential. And guarding means that there's something outside of me. Adam HaRishon was already aware of the fact that he was struggling. Because that's what it means to be a human being. And so bringing this into the space of individuals in recovery, because ultimately what a person has to learn to accept is that I am imperfect and that's okay. This is where I am going to find the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. In each and every day, I come to a place, I wake up in the morning, and I'm able to get to that place simply whether it's the news that does it, whether it's tiredness that does it, whether it's a good mood that does it. But Moida Ani, when I say Moida Ani, as Labav Treb, as Schus Yogan Aleinu pointed out, what I'm acknowledging, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, is I am admitting, Hashem, that I've got nothing for you today. I have nothing. I have nothing. I can't get out of bed. Give me everything. Because with you, I have everything, Hashem. Give me my koach. Give me my strength. Let me be with you today, and then I'm going to be able to serve you. So this recognition of powerlessness, this acknowledgement that there's something that I cannot do, that's where recovery comes from, and that's where Hasidus comes from, and that's really where the Torah comes from. Klal Yisrael received the Torah not because they were perfect, Adarabba. They received the Torah because they were the ones who were finally willing to accept that they were imperfect. Lule Sairoscha Sha'ashuai Azavadati Bioni. The prerequisite to receiving Torah as a plaything is the recognition that without it, I'm dead. Without it, I'm dead. I've got nothing without it. Hashem, I don't want the Torah because it's going to make me smarter. I don't want the Torah because it's going to make me fuller. I don't want the Torah because it's going to make me feel better about myself. I want the Torah because without the Torah, I'm done. I've got nothing. I don't have a life vest. I don't have an anchor. I'm drowning in the waters of this world. That is the intensity. The intensity that a recovering individual has towards God, it's an intoxication towards God. They're intoxicated on the need to be connected to God, because the moment I'm disconnected from Hashem in my mind, in my heart, in my body, I'm floating in this world. I've got nothing to stand upon. And so what Rabbi Nachman offers, and really what the tzaddikim offer, what they offer all of us, and especially those who are struggling, is the ability to first and foremost be okay not being okay. Right? First and foremost to recognize that as a human being, my job is to learn how to accept the simple fact that I am not perfect and I will never be perfect. The notion of perfection is avodah zara, it's klipa, it's not a real word. Shlemus means something, yes, but it's only relative, right? This ceiling is shlemus because it's the highest point in the room, but from the perspective of the next floor, it's the lowest point in the room. That's what happens ad infinitum. The highest level is simply the lowest level of the next level, and Hashem is infinite and the levels are infinite. Kedushasi lemala mekedushaseichem, your holiness, Hashem, is above mine, which means I will always not be perfect. And if I can own that, then I can put aside the feelings of shame, guilt, embarrassment, and difficulty of not being perfect. It takes some time to let go of that. And then when I accept the fact that, okay, I'm imperfect, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, so let me serve you. So this is where tefillah comes from. Tefillah is recognition of imperfection. The Maharal says, why do we daven? We daven because we're coming to realize our dependency on God. We're dependent, we're addicted, we're dependent on you, God. There's an amazing teaching. I don't even know what time it is. Are we good on time? There's an amazing teaching from the Beis Yaakov of Ishbitz Radzini. He was the son of the Meishiloach. Anyone here the Meishiloach other than Madrichim? Okay, Gevalt. So the Meshi Loach was a student of the Kotzker Rebbe. Anybody hear the Kotzker Rebbe? Right. So the Kotzker Rebbe was a student of Rav Simcha Bunim, who was a pharmacist, basically. Again, tzaddikim were just trying to make people feel better. That's what they were trying to do. And he was the Talmud of the Yir HaKadosh. But famously, the Kotzker Rebbe said something as follows. He said, there's nothing, ein davar yoter shalem meliv nishbar. There's nothing more whole than a broken heart. And the way that we tend to understand there's nothing more whole than a broken heart is that when a person's heart breaks open, so then they're able to look at each piece of their heart, they're able to analyze where that heart got broken, and they're able to fix it and seal it back up again. That's the typical understanding. But the Kotzker Rebbe had a Talmud, the Meshi Loach, who left him at the Sixth Hakafa in 1840. Important year for some people, right? And for all of us, it's an important year. But I think that's why Reb David actually named it 1840, specifically because of he's a Talmud of the Ishbitzer of Tzadok. So. But the Ishbitzer left and really developed a chassidus that helps us cultivate an awareness of this notion of being imperfect. There's a halacha that a person cannot daven when they're intoxicated. Right? There's a halacha. Except Rav Kook has a beautiful haga'ah about Purim. Maybe on Purim you could daven when you're intoxicated. Beyond that, a person's not allowed to daven when they're intoxicated. Why? Because the Gemara in Yoma says as follows. What is someone who's drunk like? Kol ha'oilam nira lahem kemeshor. The entire world appears like a straight thing. There's no issue. Everything is fine. I'm fine. I could have a conversation with a garbage can and I feel like I'm the biggest poet in the world. Everything is good. And that's the very opposite of tefillah. Because tefillah comes from a place of the recognition of what I'm missing, of what I need from you, Hashem. When I'm learning, okay, that's a time to feel good about myself and utilize my strengths. When I'm davening, it's an acknowledgement of Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Echkenisht, I can't without you. I can't. And I promise you, you're going to have to get to that feeling one moment or another, and it's better to cultivate it in youth when it's easier. Right? We have to get aligned with the fact that things are never going to be perfect, they're not meant to be perfect. The notion of perfection is Avodah Zarah. Hashem is perfect and His Torah is perfect, but beyond that, nothing is perfect. Nothing. It's Rav Shlomo Bubaver's yard site. There's a maisa from Rav Shlomo Bubaver that there was a painter in his house. There was a painter in his house who was painting. They were repainting the kitchen. Let's call him Larry. And the Bubaver Rebbe came down one morning and he saw that Larry was there already painting. And he quickly took out, you know, orange juice and some food for this person. And as tzaddikim do, they're sitting and talking to this person, not to be frum, but because that's what you do. You talk to a person as they are right in front of you. And the Bubaver Rebbe said, you know, okay, have a wonderful day, Larry. I'm excited that you're working on our house. Have a wonderful day. And as the Bubaver Rebbe is walking out, Larry stops him and he says, Rabbi, you forgot to say something. And the Bubaver Rebbe says, what? What did I forget? He says, every time I come to a community like this and I'm painting, they say, just do your best and make sure it's perfect. And he says, Rev, don't you want me to do my best and make sure it's perfect? And the Bubaver Rebbe stopped and he turned to him and he says, you know what, Larry? Once upon a time, there was something that was close to perfect. That was a house in Yerushalayim, that was the Beis HaMikdash, that was close to perfect. And we don't have that anymore. And so once that's gone, there is absolutely nothing perfect in this world. And so no, I want you to do your best, but you certainly are not expected to do anything perfectly. This acknowledgement of powerlessness, it doesn't lead to, okay, let me stay in bed, let me not do anything. It leads to the recognition that I am going to do, but when I'm doing, it's coming from Hashem. I am a shliach of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. This is the deepest Torah in Rabbi Nachman. It's the deepest Torah in the Vilna Gaon. It's the deepest Torah in the Ramchal. It's the deepest Torah of all of the tzaddikim. We are the shluchim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We do not do things on our own. The moment we begin to feel that we are self-sufficient and that we have enough in ourselves of our own power to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam and to do anything in this world, then we've lost our way. A person has to say Tefillah Sederach every second of their lives. Because Tefillah Sederach is the recognition that Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I'm walking along a path. I don't know what's going to be. There are a lot of different things that can be, but you're going to be my protection. And when a person attaches themselves to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam in that way, then my imperfection begins to be the way that Hashem is able to accomplish mitzvahs in this world. Hashem can't be imperfect, Kavyachol. Right? But we can be imperfect. And the light that we can cultivate by being imperfect, it's a light that Rebbeinu Shel Olam loves. That's the deepest light that can come about. When a person davens or cries or sighs or overcomes a difficult emotion or is able to believe in themselves and overcome shame and realize that just because that person looked at me this way, it doesn't say anything about who I am. When a person is able to elevate themselves even for a moment, it's bigger than any korban that's ever been mukrav, especially in our generation. Rav Tzaduk said it, Rabbi Nachman said it, the Zohar HaKadosh says it, the Arizal says it. That Rav Chaim Vital came to the Arizal and said, how could it be that lower generations are going to be capable of bringing about a fixing that previous generations couldn't bring about, right? We're all looking for something to be fixed. Something broke, and we're looking for it to be fixed, right? Something is broken in our lives, in the world at large, in our families, in the way we relate to Hashem, in the way we daven, and that's okay. Again, like we said, broken is fine. Like the Kotzker Rebbe said, there's nothing more whole than a broken heart, which also means, right, if we take the Kotzker Rebbe's words seriously, then the inverse would also be true, right? So if the Kotzker Rebbe is saying there's nothing more whole than a broken heart, then what would be true also is there's nothing more broken than a whole heart. That there's nothing sadder than a person who feels that they're perfect. There's nothing sadder than a person who feels that they've reached where they need to reach and that they don't need help anymore from Hashem. What we need to cultivate is a perpetual sense of Hashem, because you're here with me, I'm okay. Gam ki yelech begeitz hamavos lo irara. I could walk in the valley of the shadow of death and not be afraid at all. Why? Because you're with me. But the moment you're without me, then I can't even walk in the most beautiful hotel in the world and be okay. With Hashem, I'm good anywhere, because I'm no longer driving. I'm no longer driving. In addiction, the wisdom of recovery is that a person is trying so hard to drive the bus, right? We're taught very young that we're in control, right? Our parents want to give us responsibility. They want us to be independent. They want us to be able to take care of ourselves and clean for ourselves and get up on ourselves. And so what a child begins to develop with is a sense of, I'm in charge here, right? I'm the one who's driving the bus here. And we grip at the wheel. We grip so hard at the wheel until our fingers are almost bleeding, because we're trying so hard and so intensely to be in charge. Until eventually there comes a point in a person's life where they're able to look at themselves and realize, I'm just like a little kid playing with a toy steering wheel thinking that I'm driving the bus. I've got nothing to do with where the bus is going. I've got the choice to make from the moment that I wake up in the morning to the moment that I go to bed at night. That's all I have in front of me. Moments of bechira. But the outcomes and how things go, that's up to Hashem. And the wisdom of addiction is that I think I'm in control. The addict or the alcoholic wants control. They're their own God. You know why? Because I don't care about what's happening during the day. I know that if I engage in this behavior later on, I know exactly how I'm going to feel. It's a promise of perfection. Things can be chaotic because I know what's going to happen at the end of my night. Recovery is coming to terms with what they refer to as letting go and letting God. Letting go of the wheel and realizing that I have been driving myself crazy under the assumption that I am in control here, that I'm all powerful, that I'm supposed to be perfect. And what I'm finally allowing myself to do is accept the wisdom of powerlessness, of bittul, of letting go, of not trying to be in charge. And this doesn't lead to inactivity. Adarabah v'ipcha mestaber, it leads to more activity. It leads to trying even harder to be with Hashem in each and every moment. And so what we learn from addicts, what we learn from individuals in recovery, is that in the end of the day, the greatest thing, the only thing that's going to provide us with any semblance of hope in our lives, is the recognition that Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you're the only thing I have. You're the only thing I have. And then the Rabbeinu Shel Olam reflects himself in everything you have. So when you're with your friends, you're with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. When you're with your family, you're with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And what does it mean to be with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in this sense? Again, to keep it practical. To be with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, again, each and every person gets to choose what that means for them. But to be with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is to allow oneself to be okay. To take a deep breath and to feel okay in this moment. I don't have to run anywhere. I don't have to run to anything. I'm not missing out on anything, even though I'm not involved in everything, right? There's a bunch of other shirim going on right now. And the hope is that when a person is experiencing one shir, they're able to close their minds off to the reality that other things are going on. The fact that there are other things that are going on that I'm not part of right now is what takes me out of the moment. It doesn't allow me to be okay. When I can close my eyes a little bit and realize that what I have in front of me right here, right now, is all that I need. When a person walks into a room, they kiss the mezuzah. On that mezuzah, there's a name. It's the Shin Dalad Yud, Shakai. It's one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal asked, what does that word mean? What does Shakai mean? Sheyesh dai be'elokuso l'chol b'riya v'briya. There's enough of me for each person, Hashem says. You don't have to worry, you're not going to miss out. If the other person has, it doesn't matter, there's enough. As opposed to capitalism and everything we do, which is rooted in scarcity, a sense of not enoughness, so what you have is threatening to me, because that means I don't have it, and therefore I need a hoard, I need to, you know, collect all my milos, because one day I'm going to have to prove myself. It drives us crazy. But when I realize that I have enough, that person has enough, I am enough, this moment is enough, in that moment I can take a deep breath and find the moment of yishav hadas, of satisfaction. One of the most important things that we try and teach individuals in recovery is how to relate to time. Because time is pain. For a person who's in pain, time just makes things much worse. Right? Which is why the entire question of Gemara, the entire question of Torah Shebaal Peh is a question of time. Me'eim asai. It's teaching us how to learn with living in time. And so a person tries to be okay for a day, and then 2 days, and then a week, and then a month, and a year. And I want to be able to have my plan set out for 20 years down the line. I want to make sure everything is going to go well. This is how I can say, you ask me what I'm up to, I'm learning here, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, then I'll get this job, that internship, and everything is going to be good, be'ezras Hashem, and then I'll have my great-grandkids, v'chule, v'chule, right? So the notion of thinking more than what's right in front of you in early addiction and early recovery is not a possibility. It's one moment at a time. Why is it one moment at a time? It's one moment at a time because to do something for more than one moment at a time is an impossibility for that person. Be sober today. Think clearly today. That is a very heavy thing. And the moment you say 2 days for the person is the moment they say, oh, forever, I can't do it. So there's a big emphasis on one moment at a time. But what happens is, and I've said this to clients over and over and over and over again, that what starts off as a prescription, right? It's offered as a medicine in order to help a sick person get to where they need to get to. You're too sick to do something for more than one moment at a time, so do it one moment at a time. Ideally, you'll develop, you'll grow up, and you'll be able to do things for more than one moment at a time. But there's a deeper secret, which is that really this prescription is also the goal. Because when a person can truly learn to connect themselves to God, and not to try and find artificial forms of perfection in the self, we learn that there's no greater gift than being present in the moment right in front of me right now. One moment at a time. What happened before doesn't matter. What will happen after doesn't matter. All that exists is right here, right now. The Hove. Hashem's name is Yud Kei Vav Kei. Haya Hove V'yihia. The Tzadikim say, really, it's a Yud and a Hove. Because a Yud is a Yid and the Hove is the present. The Kashnitzer Magid says that a Yid is the Yud who's Makasha themselves to the Hove. It's a person who is connecting themselves to the present moment. And so what the clients, the wisdom of recovery, is really bittul one moment at a time. Ownership over my powerlessness, the recognition that I'm not in control here, Rabbanu Shleilam, I'm done trying to drive the bus, I'm going to give it over to you, I'm going to allow myself to be a shliach for you, I'm not going to run away from life, I'm going to lean into life, and I'm going to do it one moment at a time. To end, just with a teaching from Rabbi Nachman on this inyan, and this is just one of the many theories of Naaman of Bratslav that they got to hear about, right? And we could do this, any person who's learning Maharal, Pachad Yitzchak, Shas, Poiskim, you can apply each and every line that you're learning to some psychological truth about yourself. There's not a single sugya in Gan Shas, and I'm not saying that from experience, believe me, but there's not a single sugya, right? We have tzaddikim, we believe when they say things. There's not a single sugya that cannot be applied to the redemption of the self. Whether I'm learning Shor Shanaga Hasapar, whether I'm learning Tzimtzum, whether I'm learning Maharal and Tfaris Yisrael, and I'm learning Rabbeinu Yonah on Pirkei Avos or Achayim HaKadosh, every teaching, every word of Torah has the capacity to be Machayim Esim when applied properly and understood properly. So this is just one example of a medicinal dosage of Rabbi Nachman that can be applied across the board. And I have evidence that this one works very well. Hayom in Bekolo Tishmau. Right? This is Torah Reish Ayin Beis, the 272nd teaching. But they were very delicate. They didn't want to write the word ra'av. They didn't want to write the word hunger because it implies something bad. So the printers switched around the letters to arev, ayin resh beis, which means pleasantness. But this teaching, as we're going to see, is exactly defined by that. There's ra'avon, there's hunger. A person has a desire, a craving for something more. And if a person follows that cravenous desire, they're never going to be satisfied. And there has to be a secret of transforming that desire into a place of comfort. And that answer is hidden in this Torah. Hayom in Bekolo Tishmau, today if you hear my voice. Zeh klal gadol ba'avodas Hashem, this is a major, major principle when it comes to the service of God. So yasim leneged einav ki im osa hayom, that a person should not place in front of their eyes anything other than that day. Hein be'esek haparnasav hitzrachuso tzarech shlo yachshuv miyom l'chaviro, whether it's with regards to physical reality in this world, I can't think about anything but today, as it's explained. And so too in avodas Hashem yisparach, lo yasim leneged einav ki im osa hayom va'osa sha'a. When it comes to the service of God, and here Rabbi Nachman goes even farther, do not place in front of yourself anything more than that day, and forget about that day, nothing more than that hour, nothing more than that moment itself. Why? When a person wants to enter into the service of God, it appears to the individual as if it is a burden that is far too large to carry. I can't do it. I might as well give up already. I can't do it for 3 days. I can't stop this for a week. I could stop it for an hour maybe, but to stop for a week, I've already failed, so I might as well fail on my own terms and not even try. Right? We say, Chazal say that Nevuah was taken from the Nevi'im and given to the Shaitim. Shaitim are people who have anxiety. Meshaitet b'machshavoseihem. The thoughts are going back and forth. And what's that Nevuah? It's self-fulfilling prophecy, right? We're convinced that we're not going to succeed, and then we don't try and succeed, and mamela we don't succeed, and we say, oh, I'm a prophet, I always knew it. So we think it's too heavy for us, and we don't even try. But when a person realizes that all I have is today, it's not going to be a burden. I'm also not going to allow my natural tendency towards procrastination to end, to stop me. And I'm going to be able to find redemption today, in this moment, in this hour, acceptance of powerlessness, reliance on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the joy of being okay, being where we're at, and the willingness to move forward in each and every moment. Be'ezras Hashem. Tachlis is, learn more Rabbi Nachman also. Okay. Shkoyach.